You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rough Bell Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Hey, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty, and welcome to the weekend. It is Friday, August 8th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We are so excited. We are just 1 week away from Seattle Hemp Fest. It starts next Friday, and you can get a Google Calendar subscription for all of the speakers and bands at the main stage, the Seeley stage, the McWilliam stage, and the Hemposium stage. Stay tuned for Hour 2 Toker Talk Radio. I'll be posting the links to all of those Google Calendars so that you can download them and have them ready. Also, Seattle Hemp Fest has a new app available at iPhone and Android stores, so check that out if you'd like that app for your scheduling purposes. We are, like I said, really excited about this weekend, this next coming weekend, Seattle Hemp Fest and the CannaCon at the Tacoma Dome. They're expecting 50,000 people at CannaCon with 7,000, I don't know how many exhibitors, but a lot of vendors and volunteers. That's going on Thursday through Sunday, and I am taking part in both. I'll be at booth 230 at the Tacoma Dome with the Marijuana Business Association during the evenings or the afternoons and during the mornings. Whenever I'm not speaking at HempFest, that's when I'll be at CannaCon. We still have yet to work out the schedule. It's going to be pretty damn hectic, so we'll try to get that all figured out as well. So also coming up on today's show, we have got the 420 radio news, and in the news today, some really interesting headlines, lawsuits and petitions all over the place. We're going to take a look at the state of Maine, where there's three cities that will be voting on legalization. The state of Kansas, where shenanigans are preventing a city from voting on decriminalization. The city of San Diego, with a very creative lawsuit to get around bans or restrictions on dispensaries. We've got more fallout now, a class action lawsuit over that accidental over-ingestion at the Denver County Fair, and a terrifying tale from Fresno, California, where a pre-dawn ripper operation led to a gun battle and two deaths. We'll tell you all about that in the 420 radio news. Then coming up in our behind the headlines segment, we are going to take a look at a terrible story coming out of my home state here in Oregon, where medical marijuana patients have now been officially banned from not just working at or owning a daycare, but living at one if it's their home. We'll tell you all about that in Behind the Headlines. Then coming up at 1:30, good friend of the show's calling in, we've got Michael Kravitz from Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. He's going to give us the latest updates from Washington, D.C. and the fight to get medical cannabis access to our nation's veterans. And at the Radical Rant segment, we will have time to talk about this study that has just blown me away. I saw it earlier today, a study showing, you know how we go around in the drug war business and in the reform business here, telling people how racist our drug laws are and how disproportionately blacks and Latinos are being arrested for and incarcerated for drugs. It turns out that might actually be working against us. We'll tell you about this new study that uncovered white racism in America in a way I have yet to see. Also coming up on Hour 2 Toker Talk Radio, so much news, we got to kick it into 2 hours. We got some funny video clips from the Kardashians, believe it or not, and the Conan O'Brien Show and Larry King sharing a pot brownie live on the show. Also, we've got a story about marijuana testing and the call for regulation and standardization, another example of drug testing for welfare being a useless waste of time, and Representative Micah on Capitol Hill had a hearing on stone driving. It kind of backfired on him. Plus, Herb Thrasher calling in with our daily Toker tunes for Rockin' Friday. It's a lot of stuff. Let's get to it. I'm Radical Russ. We'll be right back with the news after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Bellville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest.
My name is Richard William Riggs. I'm a judge in Oregon. In 1998, I was elected to the Oregon Supreme Court, where I served until October of 2006. I've been asked to give my views about the new approach to marijuana initiative that is going to be before the voters very soon, and I'm happy to do so. I've read the measure, and I'm going to vote for it. And the reason I'm going to vote for it is because I think that it's inevitable that marijuana is coming to Oregon in one form or another. And I hope it comes in the form of a good bill like this one. If we're going to have marijuana in Oregon, this is the way to do it. Drugs and marijuana particularly play a huge role in the economic engines of most of the local gangs. The gang-related violence that occurs is often as a result of bad drug transactions of one kind or another. I think the proper legalization of marijuana and the control of it in an appropriate way is a substantial step forward to eliminating some of those problems. Using the criminal justice system to enforce certain societal social norms is kind of a waste of resources. It takes away from the criminal justice system dealing with forcible rapes and murders and so forth. I've read this measure, and I'm going to vote for this measure. And I think anybody who reads the measure and gives it careful thought will probably join me in that vote.
Drug Truth Network, Century of Lies with Dean Becker from Houston, Texas. Replaying Mondays at 11 Pacific on 420radio.org.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Priscilla Simon.
Priscilla Simon is off today with your 420 Radio News for Friday, August 8th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. A petition to decriminalize marijuana in Wichita, Kansas has fallen 47 signatures short. But activists with the Decrim campaign are questioning just how County Election Commission's supervisor Tabitha Lehman has been counting the signatures. The campaign turned in over 6,400 signatures for a petition drive that required just shy of 3,000 signatures by law. Lehman's office rejected about 3,600 signatures as invalid, a roughly 45% validity rate. Activists point out that Lehman's office subjectively disqualified signatures they felt didn't match a person's handwriting on their voter registration card. Lehman responded that while her office doesn't employ anyone trained as a handwriting expert, she did have several of her employees look at the questionable signatures before rejecting them. The initiative would make simple possession of marijuana a $25 fine-only offense. Activists will ask the Wichita City Council on Tuesday to put the initiative before the voters. Otherwise, they will recirculate their petition in time for the next city election. Wait a minute. I got to wrap my mind around that. We don't have any handwriting experts among any of our employees, so we took a whole bunch of them that aren't experts and had them look at something. How does that make any difference? Well, I feel a lot better that instead of one unqualified person denying my right to petition, it's a whole bunch of unqualified people denying my right to petition. This is just another example of bureaucratic and electoral shenanigans that we have to fight against as marijuana reformers. They are going to try to put every little roadblock they can in our way, and they're going to put extra heightened scrutiny on every single signature sheet that we turn in. You can bet if this were some petition to help the Ag Council or the Business League or whatever the hell try to get something that they wanted, oh boy, those signatures would be declared really valid, really easy. They wouldn't spend a whole lot of time worrying about it. But when it comes to marijuana, they're going to do everything they can to try to thwart the inevitable will of the people. Good on the people of Wichita, Kansas for continuing to fight for this, because you know what? I would really love to have a reporter reporting from Kansas on marijuana election night this November 4th on 420 Radio. Voters in South Portland, Lewiston, and likely York, Maine will join Oregon, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. in voting for marijuana legalization this November. While the municipal votes in these three towns in Maine will largely be symbolic, if passed, they would join the state's largest city, Portland, which passed legalization of 2.5 ounces of possession by 67% last year. They would be setting the stage for a statewide legalization campaign in 2016. Today, the Maine Marijuana Policy Project turned in enough valid signatures to force Lewiston City Council to legalize possession of 1 ounce of marijuana by adults 21 and older, or place the initiative before the voters. On Monday, the City Council of South Portland placed that city's 1 ounce legalization on the ballot. On the previous Monday, the Board of Selectmen in York voted 3-2 not to place 1 ounce legalization on the ballot after MMMP submitted a required 100 signatures to make that request. However, the activist group plans on continuing collecting of the 631 signatures needed to force a public vote. Hey, this is great. Now, I can't wait to have someone reporting for us from Maine on these three cities voting on legalization when we do marijuana election night on November 4th here on 420radio.org. This is really exciting. And this is the way to do it, folks. You know, I've been doing this for about 10 years now, and I can't tell you how many times someone would say, "When's Normal going to come to our town? And when's Normal going to come to our state and legalize it? When are they going to come legalize in Oklahoma? When are they going to legalize in Tennessee? When are they going to legalize in Ohio?" And so on. And that's not how it works. And right out of the bat, you don't want to try to do something statewide, man. Learn how to walk before you learn how to run. Taking on a citywide initiative is the way to do this. Prove that you can handle things on a municipal level. Pick a few small towns and go at it. And then from there, you can start building the networks and the alliances and the coalitions and have people believe in your capability to do these things. That leads to what the statewide changes are that you'll want to see. It's how they handled it in Colorado. Denver had voted on a couple of things as far as decrim and legalization went before they went to full legalization. In Missouri, in Michigan, in Massachusetts, I don't know why it's all M states, but they've done the same sort of thing. They've started in the city level and they're building to a statewide coalition. And this is just going to pick up steam. We're going to get more and more cities that are going to pull this off. And hopefully Wichita, Kansas can join South Portland, Lewiston, and York this November. San Diego's Union of Medical Marijuana Patients has sued the city and the California Coastal Commission over restrictive zoning of medical marijuana co-ops. But rather than basing their complaint on patient access or disability rights, this lawsuit claims that restricting co-ops to just a few located in certain industrial and commercial zones effectively violates the California Environmental Quality Act. San Diego's, quote, "extremely restrictive approach," the lawsuit contends, will require, quote, "thousands of patients to drive across the city of San Diego to obtain their medicine because cooperatives are only allowed in certain limited places in the city, which will create traffic and air pollution," end quote. The Coastal Commission is named in the lawsuit because it had to approve San Diego's ordinance under the Environmental Quality Act, and it, quote, "failed to analyze the reasonably foreseeable consequences of increased indoor cultivation of medical marijuana," end quote, which patients are forced into when they lack co-ops. The suit notes that indoor cultivation of medical marijuana is, quote, "responsible for about 3% of all electricity use in California or 9% of household use in California, equivalent to greenhouse gas emissions equal to those from 1 million cars," end quote. Well, I applaud them for the creative use of the environmental code to try to go after this, but I don't know if that's the kind of standard they'll let stand. I mean, that's not the kind of precedent I think they would want to see. I mean, if you ruled that having this law about co-ops required more people to use indoor electricity or to drive more across town, that could be an argument that could be used by a lot of different organizations or businesses to try to get their way, claiming that this change or that change would create more traffic or would create more indoor use of electricity. I don't know about that slippery slope. I don't know if we want to go there. But, you know, short term, I think it's probably a good idea. It's got to be something. I mean, we tried every different avenue, Americans with Disabilities Act, and whether or not people have the rights under Prop 215 or SB 420. But all we've seen in California so far is a hodgepodge, a patchwork of dry and wet counties, dry and wet cities, where places like Fresno and Bakersfield and the Inland Empire largely have no access to medical cannabis, while people in the West Hollywood area or the Bay Area have all the access they could possibly want. This has to change, and only statewide regulation can do it. I feel it may be too late for statewide medical marijuana regulation, and California may have to just fold everything into a very broad recreational legalization program. The continuing fallout from accidental overingestion of THC chocolate bars at the Denver County Fair has now culminated in a class action lawsuit. Jordan Coombs was one of three people who reportedly ate full melt chocolate samples at the fair provided by LiveWell, a Denver pot shop. Two of the three people were hospitalized, the first of whom, Richard Jones, reported that the LiveWell rep who distributed the chocolate indicated they were THC-free samples. The Denver County Fair said in a statement that, quote, "We had a very strict policy that all of our vendors agree to, banning all marijuana products from the fair," end quote. In Coombs' negligence lawsuit against Full Melt Chocolate and LiveWell, he described feeling ill at the fair when he, quote, "projectile vomited uncontrollably," end quote, in the car while his wife drove him home. Jones told the media, quote, "I was sweaty, I was nauseous, I was panicking, I was afraid it was a stroke or a heart attack," end quote. Look, folks, these edible over-ingestion stories are not doing our cause any favors. And I know people on our side that have experience, people that are used to this kind of stuff, kind of laugh this stuff off, like, oh, just take a nap, or you get over it, or just relax. Folks, this can be scary. This can be very scary and somewhat painful. I have been that person. I have been the guy who has over-ingested THC from a mega dab I took in Los Angeles, and I ended up in a dry heaving fit on the sidewalk on the streets of Los Angeles, puking into a gutter, wondering when it was ever going to stop, shaking and shuddering uncontrollably, my skin clammy and cold. It was not pleasant at all. And I've been drunk. I've been hella drunk, and I've had nothing that compares to an over-ingestion of THC. So don't take this lightly and respect how powerful this is in public relations terms. We've got to get a handle on this. A pre-dawn raid in California by thieves posing as law enforcement has left two rippers dead and a teenage girl terrified. Seven armed men forced their way into a Fresno home at 4 in the morning, where three plots totaling 150 marijuana plants were growing. A man inside was pistol-whipped, and a fierce gun battle ensued between the rippers and the growers. As police arrived, two cars sped away from the scene. Officers caught one car at the hospital, where one ripper died of his gunshot wounds, and two rippers were arrested. Three others in the other car kidnapped a 15-year-old girl from the home to use as a human shield, dropping her off unharmed in downtown Fresno after eluding police on a 100-mile-per-hour chase. The seventh ripper was found dead of his gunshot wounds near the home. Fresno County Sheriff Margaret Mims said the incident is, quote, "directly related to drug trafficking and not medical marijuana," end quote. Well, Sheriff Mims, how do you know that? Since March, the county of Fresno, and since January, the city of Fresno, and maybe I've got those two backwards, but it doesn't matter. Since most of this year, both the city and county of Fresno have had absolute bans on marijuana cultivation. No co-ops, no dispensaries, and for God's sake, not even patients allowed to grow their own medicine at home. So how do you know those 150 plants weren't being grown for medical marijuana patients in the area? You've got this huge area of Central California where people have to drive all the way across the state in one direction or another just to access the medicine that the voters of California said they should have the right to use with their doctor's recommendation under Prop 215 18 years ago. Gee, 18 years, people, and the sky hasn't fallen. Can't you get it through your thick skulls that allowing people to use medical marijuana is a good thing? And prohibiting it just causes things like this. It's 420 in Denver. We got to take a break and get something to relax with. We're back with Behind the Headlines and Oregon medical marijuana patients banned from daycares after this.
420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups.
Join us for the International Cannabis Business Conference September 13th and 14th in the Portland Ballroom at the Oregon Convention Center. The International Cannabis Business Conference will focus on the emerging cannabis industry in Oregon, the United States, and around the world, putting you in front of the industry's foremost entrepreneurs, political leaders, and attorneys. Also showcasing over 40 cannabis-related industry exhibitors, offering VIP lunches and free nightly networking events. Prepare yourself for America's next great industry.
I don't use marijuana, but as a teacher of 36 years, I can tell you lots of other people use it. I don't believe in prohibition. I don't think it works. Prohibiting it hasn't stopped anybody from getting a hold of it. I would like to see it regulated so that maybe kids can't get a hold of it so easily. I know they get a hold of it now very easily. I support a new approach to marijuana. I support legalizing it. It's with us. It's not going to go away. And if we can get money through the taxation, we can also educate our kids about it. That's why I support it.
Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about seven people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net. At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. 23 and a half after the hour, and it's time for us to go behind the headlines where the Early Learning Council for the state of Oregon has unanimously passed a temporary rule banning owners and operators of daycare facilities from holding medical marijuana registry cards, a status they must now report on their daycare license applications. The move comes after a request from Governor John Kitzhaber following a July report in the Oregonian about Alphabet Learning Academy in Salem. A cable TV installer detected marijuana smoke in an office separate from the home where the daycare is operated and reported it to authorities. The homeowner, Charity Arojo, sorry about the name pronunciation, operated the daycare there until voluntarily surrendering her license and turning over operation of the daycare to her daughter, Mariah, earlier this year. Four of the five employees who live and work at the home are medical marijuana care holders. Charity had disclosed her status as a medical marijuana patient to the Early Learning Council. In a letter dated May 15th and signed by state compliance specialist Christy Mitchell, the council accepted the use of medical marijuana by daycare employees, provided it was not used around the children, that no kids would be exposed to secondhand smoke, that marijuana and paraphernalia were kept locked up, and a second non-medicated adult is present to supervise children. The agreement also specified that the status of the daycare licensee as a medical marijuana patient and the agreement itself would be kept private unless otherwise directed by the Oregon Attorney General. Charity explained that she and the other employees never used marijuana while on shift, and when she uses marijuana, it is in an enclosed tent in the yard when the children aren't present. Charity told the Oregonian, quote, "We don't have anyone medicated who is responsible for the children," end quote. Since the media coverage of the Salem daycare complaint hit, the state combed through the records of 4,340 licensed child care providers, finding that just 9 had volunteered that they employed any medical marijuana cardholders, according to the Statesman Journal in Salem. Just 5 daycare providers are owned by medical marijuana cardholders, including Alphabet Learning Academy. The other 4 daycares received a surprise inspection last month, and all 4 passed with flying colors, according to state officials. One daycare owner who uses marijuana to treat fibromyalgia complained about being forced to disclose her personal medical information, adding that she only medicates after hours when the children are gone. Another owner explained she only uses a cannabis salve and doesn't smoke marijuana at all. These new rules not only ban home daycare operators from being medical marijuana patients, they ban any marijuana on the premises. This effectively means that not only are patients barred from owning and operating a daycare, they and even their family members can't use medical marijuana in their own home, even after hours or weekends when the children are away. However, home daycare providers are still allowed to keep alcohol on the premises, so long as they follow safety precautions like keeping it out of kids' reach. The hypocrisy of the council's move was not lost on state medical marijuana advocates. Anthony Taylor with Compassionate Oregon told ABC News, quote, "You don't make these kind of requirements for people that are using Vicodin. You don't make these kind of requirements for people who are using methadone." And yes, it's just another example of yet again the bigotry that's used against people that are using cannabis. And this bigotry, I've got to say, was inadvertently enhanced by dividing cannabis smokers into patients and criminals. By keeping that dichotomy, we enhance the idea there's something wrong with the use of cannabis unless something more wrong compels its use. Oh, you know, you're a bad, awful, evil person if you smoke pot, but cancer is so much more evil and worse that we can accept it in that case. And all that does is amplify people's belief that there's something wrong with people who use cannabis. And it continues to demonize, especially in this dichotomy we have now between CBD and THC, it continues to demonize this idea of THC's after effect, of its side effect of a mild euphoria, as being something greater than what it is. People have this equivalent of thinking of high as something that is crazy, out of control, changes your perception, changes your character, changes your morals. And it's not. It's nothing like that. If anything, alcohol is the one that does that. Until we can get it legalized for all people, we're going to continue to see this kind of discrimination. Until we are equalized with beer drinkers and cigar smokers, neither of whom are restricted from owning or operating a daycare, I might note. Until we can get that sort of equality, we're going to have to keep fighting these sort of battles. It doesn't end with legalization. It starts with legalization. We'll be back with Michael Kravitz, Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access, right after this.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb.
As part of your organization, Dan, you are essentially targeting 10 or so states for legalizing recreational marijuana: Rhode Island, Vermont, New Hampshire, Hawaii. What's your sense of why those states could be ripe for legalization?
Well, the states that you mentioned are most likely to do this legislatively. They don't have a ballot initiative process there like we do in Colorado and Washington, where ballot initiatives were recently passed, and like we do in Maine, California, Arizona, Nevada, and some other states where we expect in 2016 or maybe even sooner, initiatives will pass to tax and regulate marijuana.
And Reed, is it a sense that this could end up being another sort of coastal middle America divide or red state, blue state divide?
Well, aside from a few states like Nevada and Arizona that you just mentioned, every other state in that list has one thing in common: they have Democratic legislatures. And in those states, you know, one of the big stories that we're telling at GovBeat is the divide between red America and blue America.
Yeah.
Red America is restricting abortion and cutting taxes on everything, whereas blue America is legalizing gay marriage and legalizing marijuana. So here we see, again, that sort of patchwork nation. As you mentioned, it's the coastal version.
Hemp Beach TV, replaying Fridays at 12 Pacific on 420radio.org.
The International Cannabis Business Conference takes place September 13th and 14th at the Portland Ballroom in the Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon. Featured speakers include Oregon Senator Floyd Prezansky, U.S. Congressman Earl Blumenauer, Daily Dish blogger Andrew Sullivan, author Doug Fine, and Harborside CEO Steve D'Angelo. To learn more, visit our website at internationalcbc.com.
The Marijuana Business Association, or MJBA, are proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show. It is the mission of the MJBA to establish integrity and legitimacy, create common market standards, provide market intelligence, and develop best ethical business practices for participants in the emerging legal marijuana industry, including commercial hemp, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana for adults. Learn more about the Marijuana Business Association and visit MJBA.net to join today. That's MJBA.net.
Welcome back, everybody. 32 after the hour, and joining us by telephone today, we've got Michael Kravitz from Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. Michael, welcome back.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Russ. Thanks for having me on. Sorry, I'm a little discombobulated here. I just walked in the door.
I totally understand how that feels. Michael, of course, has been fighting for veterans and for medical marijuana in general for a long time now, and he joins us from time to time to give us updates on what's happening in his battle. So tell us, what is happening? What's the latest?
Well, gosh, it's going in so many different directions. I have to be... the question almost has to be more specific for me. But we're working on several fronts, working on various states to add different qualifying conditions that veterans may suffer from, post-traumatic stress, neuropathic pain, things like that that may or may not be covered by the qualifications of the medical marijuana laws. And we're also working on a couple of bills in Congress. But I think today, the thing that I would find most pressing to talk about kind of to the activist community would be the NGO work that we've embarked on. We're working at the United Nations on trying to reform international drug policy. Coming up is a big drug summit in 2016, and we're all kind of gearing up for that.
Wow, that's fantastic. I also noted in some of the things that you'd sent me earlier, working with trying to get the Secretary of Human Services, Health and Human Services, to remove some of the barriers that are necessary here. Something that you're doing along with MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. That was back in May. Do you have any report on how that went?
Well, we were able to get approval for our study, of course, finally. MAPS worked on it for like 20 years to get approval to get the cannabis from the federal government. It's a strange, ironic situation that we work in, where in any legal state, you can go to any dispensary and get cannabis, but to study it in a university, you have to get cannabis from the federal government to be able to study it and have the appropriate kind of results published in the appropriate kind of places. And we finally did get that approval for our post-traumatic stress study, but we felt as veterans, we weren't just going to walk away. We were going to make sure that the next study that came down the pike wasn't going to get held up for 20 years, no matter what it was. Maybe it could be phantom limb pain, who knows? But whatever it might be, we felt like we should knock that door down while we had it open. And we assembled a sign-on letter with some Republican leadership, believe it or not, and circulated that. And the full impact of that really hasn't been felt yet.
You know, one of the outcomes that we saw, we had that researcher, Dr. Suzanne Sisley, down there at University of Arizona, who was given the approval to go ahead with that and then was suddenly fired by University of Arizona. I know a lot of veterans were interested in that because it was going to be the first FDA clinical trial on cannabis for post-traumatic stress. What can you tell us about Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access in that particular case?
Well, that's part of the same story with MAPS. Mm-hmm. And what's going on there is a real saga. If people have been following very closely, they know that this isn't a new thing where we've been battling back and forth with the state. Here we finally get approval from the federal government to do the study, but there was some hesitance, is putting it way too lightly, within the university. There's a couple of people there within the university that really are just anti-marijuana people. They find themselves more drug warrior than they do researcher. And they're really making life hard for Dr. Sisley. They've actually moved to try to remove her from her post. That's not, you know, the good news, for, I guess, for us is twofold. One is I don't think that's going to stop the study any, because MAPS is already looking at potentially doing some of the study in Colorado anyway. And as long as we have another university that's willing to carry the ball, Dr. Sisley can do the study there. And the second part is I don't think it'll hurt Dr. Sisley's career path any. In the end, hopefully, cross your fingers, you know, it'll help her in the end get the respect that she deserves for her work, which has been stellar. I mean, you're not talking about somebody who has any kind of flaw in their performance record, facing this kind of abuse. It's pretty straightforwardly anti-marijuana.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Michael Kravitz from Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access, and we've also seen moves now by the Obama administration, some very pro-reform moves as far as Eric Holder and the Justice Department doing retroactive sentencing reductions and allowing Washington and Colorado to move forward with recreational legalization programs and so forth. Is any of this starting to trickle down into the VA, into the people that deal with veterans care with respect to the medical marijuana states?
The VA is a real problem area. I don't need to tell you that. You know, anyone that's watched any amount of news knows that the VA is in some serious hot water with respect to how it's treating veterans. Overall, veterans facing, you know, ridiculous wait times, outcomes that are just completely unacceptable. And the taxpayers and the Congress are foreclosing on those problems. Unfortunately, medical marijuana kind of gets caught in the crossfire there. And I'll explain how I mean that. When they're dealing with over-medicating veterans, giving them too many drugs, too many narcotics, and too many, Valium kind of drugs that are interacting and causing, you know, serious problems, either drug interaction deaths or some drugs that are being given inappropriately for, like, post-traumatic stress, that right on the label suggests they may increase the rate of suicide in a population of veterans that were having outrageously and unacceptably high suicide rates. So, you know, those are real problems that the VA are trying to deal with. Unfortunately, some of how they try to deal with that gets marijuana caught up in the crossfire. So you may, as a veteran, find yourself all of a sudden being drug tested where you hadn't been drug tested before, and all of a sudden they're not going to know how to deal with your medical marijuana use. And we're seeing, you know, more and more veterans in and out of medical marijuana states that have confused doctors, not knowing how to deal with this. Is it a positive? Is it a negative drug test result? But I think that overall, you know, veterans, we have a pretty good chance of getting what we need from the VA with regard to medical cannabis, because all we really need them to do is just write us a little bit of a note in our file and leave us alone. We're using the cannabis outside the VA. We're getting it from distribution sources outside the VA. And for the moment, we're really not complaining that hard about that.
I love it. Just get the government to leave you alone. That's quite a goal in and of itself, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I want to emphasize back to the international stuff that I have now taken on a role as a leader in the NGO committee in New York City. And an NGO, of course, is a non-government organization. All our charity, not-for-profit, marijuana legalization organizations are all NGOs. And now I think is a very good time for these kind of NGOs to enter into this process. And I say these kinds of NGOs because we've had groups like International Drug Policy Consortium, Open Society Foundation, even increasingly groups like Drug Policy Alliance, Global Institute. These groups have already been involved for quite a while, and Beckley Foundation and others, mostly in Europe. And they've been paying attention to the international treaties. And why do you have to pay attention to international treaties? Because if we manage to change the state laws, but we don't manage to change the federal laws before we get a new presidential administration, then we surely should be doing all we can to exert pressure outside of our own system in the United States on the international circles to make sure that it doesn't come back on us with pressure to just conform to the previous status quo. The international community is locked into a drug prohibition program that it's really hard and very entrenched. It's very hard to get rid of. And South American countries, Uruguay, other countries, and maybe even all the way up to Mexico, maybe taking a lead, European countries may be taking a lead, but I think there's a very strong role to play for U.S. NGOs at the international level, and we need to get involved. There's lots of ways for an individual to get involved by going through an NGO or an NGO committee. We have an NGO committee in New York City, one in Vienna, Austria, that's open to any NGO that wants to participate, and then some of the bigger ones that you can go through them, like I said, the International Drug Policy Consortium, Drug Policy Alliance, Open Society Foundation, etc.
As we're building these coalitions at the international level with the drug reform NGOs, I'm also curious about building coalitions with non-drug related NGOs. In America, of course, we've seen some coalitions now with unions and with ACLU or with NAACP. On the international level, and specifically with respect to veterans, are there other NGOs coming to our aid? Like, I don't know, just pick one out of the air, like Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. A veterans organization, but not particularly a marijuana organization. Is there room and is there collaboration happening that way?
Well, on the front of getting veteran service organizations to stand in front of the veterans instead of behind the veterans on this issue, which is really where they belong, we've been working with Veterans Foreign Wars. We've actually succeeded in getting a resolution passed at the state level, and then they didn't want to put it on the question, the questionnaire at the federal level. Within their organization, it just was too politically charged still. So that's kind of where we're at with these larger veteran service organizations. Now, we are finally getting some headway with some smaller veteran service organizations, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, the Iraq Veterans Against the War, and most recently, Veterans for Peace put in a resolution that's now circulating through its membership, a very strongly worded pro-medical cannabis access resolution in Veterans for Peace. On the flip side of that, at the international level already, we have groups like Human Rights Watch and Harm Reduction Coalition, International Harm Reduction, groups like Transform UK. These groups are very generally productively associated with us. You know what I mean? They may not be medical marijuana, they may not be marijuana related at all in their activism, but what they're working on is supportive and overlapping with us, either human rights, right to access medicine, right to treated with respect and dignity. These are all things that we need, maybe not towards the same policy end, but generally, cooperative. So I think that's kind of where we're at right now in the circles, working in the trenches, are kind of health-based organizations, clinical, outcome-based organizations with dealing with drug addiction or drug dependence, and of course our opposition, which is the Kevin Sabets of this world and the strange alliance like the drug courts. I think they're mistaken to ally themselves with like the addictions medicine people and the National Families in Action and those kind of crowds.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael Kravitz with Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. We always love hearing what's going on and how we're trying to treat better our veterans of our wars. And before we go, can you give folks some contact information, maybe a website or two that they could get more information on?
Sure. I work with several different groups. Most closely, with International Alliance for Cannabis as Medicine, IACM, best found on Google, Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access, and you can find us easiest on Facebook, I think, Facebook.USA.VMCA. I'm also advisor to Patients at a Time, that's medicalcannabis.com. And for the New York City NGO Committee, I would definitely recommend just coming to me directly, you know, through the Facebook medium, or contact the International Drug Policy Consortium, it's IDPC. Again, consult with Google for the exact link. But thanks so much, Russ, for having me on. I look forward to giving you guys updates. This is something that I'm kind of giving you an advanced window to participate and pay more attention to.
That's
at
right.
some point, you'll have to pay attention, but you know, I'm trying to give you a little bit of a chance to actually cooperate and participate, not just hear about it afterwards.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Everybody can get involved in this. As the sooner the better. And are you going to be in Seattle for the Hemp Fest?
Actually, I am. This is late coming together, but I'm going to be out there. It looks like they're putting together a little thing for me. I'm going to be speaking, doing some media work. I'm really excited to get out there because we do have an effort still in Washington State to add post-traumatic stress as a medical qualifying yeah. condition. Believe it or not, in the land of legal marijuana, we're still fighting to get access to medical needs. It's a surreal world we live in, Russ, right?
It sure is. We'll see you up in Seattle and really looking forward to it.
Thanks. Great. Look forward to it.
All right. When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant. We are going to talk a little bit more about this new study I found. Oh my goodness. It shows that white folks are more likely to support harsh criminal penalties if they think they're being given out to mostly black folks. It'll blow your mind. Stay tuned for that.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio. Tune in, turn on, get highly educated. At Royal Queen Seeds, we've got premium feminized cannabis seeds, including auto-flowering varieties for the medical cannabis user. We've got bulk shipments available and new CBD oil. Plus, we accept payment in Visa, MasterCard, and Bitcoin, as well as other methods. Check out our website at royalqueenseeds.com for more information. We are located in the Netherlands, and we have online grow experts ready to help you now at royalqueenseeds.com. In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
This is a vial of crack, rock cocaine. As you may have noticed, it doesn't come with a warning label. If it did, it might tell you that smoking crack affects the brain, the nervous system, the lungs, and the heart. It would also say that crack can kill you. The problem is, no one knows exactly how much it takes to do it. So every time you try it, it's a guessing game. And if you guess wrong with this stuff, you die.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
You can't have handle the truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Homosexuality, no. Immorality generally.
Down the centuries, you have slurred the meaning of the words we, the people.
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 50 after the hour. And today for the rant, we're taking a look at this study that I read about on the Think Progress blog, thinkprogress.org. And the title, Study, White People Support Harsher Criminal Laws If They Think More Black People Are Arrested. And this is pretty stunning, folks, because one of the ways that we have been fighting this war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs is by pointing out the inherent racism of it, that it was founded on racist principles, you know, to keep the cocaine-crazed Negroes from raping the white women and to keep the loco weeds smoking Mexicans from killing people and, you know, the opium-smoking Chinese from, well, raping the white women. It's all about raping the white women, basically. And more. You only need to go back and do some simple Googling on Harry J. Anslinger racism, and you'll see the things that the man who controlled our drug policies for 25 years, what he believed deep down to his core. This goes all the way up through Nixon. We can go to the Nixon tapes and listen to him asking about, you know, what the Christ is the matter with the Jews, and we've got to come up with a system that recognizes it's about the blacks without appearing to do so. All of these things leading all the way up to the statistics we see today, where African Americans in a place like Philadelphia are 90% of the possession arrests. I mean, it's just so glaringly obvious, right? And we use this. We use this in our rhetoric. Michelle Alexander broke through with her book, The New Jim Crow, in which she showed that African Americans under correctional supervision today number greater than the number of slaves there were in 1850. It just blows your mind. And the way she outlined how it is a new form of Jim Crow, it is a new form of slavery in this country. And numerous reports, Dr. Harry Levine from Queens College and the ACLU, their reports, and Drug Policy Alliance, their reports, we've all gone to great lengths to show how in the metropolitan counties in California or New York or across the country, there is far disproportionate arresting and sentencing and incarceration of African Americans and Latinos compared to white folks. And all this time we've been doing it, we've thought that, why, this'll show them. Once they recognize how unfair and racist it is, why, we'll want to change things. And maybe to some extent that's true as far as bringing along NAACP and other civil rights organizations to the table, sure. But when it comes to getting what is still a majority of the voters, white folks, to support marijuana reform or other drug sentencing and drug law reforms, this may actually have been working against us. Here's the study. It was done by Rebecca Hetty, a postdoctoral fellow at Stanford Psychology Department, and Jennifer Eberhardt, her faculty advisor. And it says, informing white people that African Americans are significantly overrepresented in the prison population, quote, may actually bolster support for the very policies that perpetuate the inequality, end quote. Now, we know from demographics that 40%, 2 out of 5 people in prison are black. 40% of the prison population is black, but only 12% of the population in America, 1 out of 8, is black. So 2 out of 5 in prison are black, but 1 out of 8 outside are black, right? So very disproportionately, we are incarcerating African Americans. So the two researchers conducted two experiments. And the first experiment, and just with white folks, right? Nothing but white people. So in the first, they brought in white folks and asked them to watch a video that had mugshots in it. Now, it could have been a video that had mugshots where 25% of them were black men. Or it could have been a video where 45% of the mugshots were black men. Randomly selected, controlled, all that kind of thing, right? And what they found is after they showed the video, they would then ask whether or not they'd sign a petition for, this is when California was doing that resentencing, they're doing the resentencing petitions, right? Like, should we ease our strict sentencing laws that disproportionately put black people behind bars, right? A campaign that has often used that fact to try to bolster support for the campaign. And what they found is half the people, over half, who saw the 25% black mugshots would sign the petition. But only 27% who saw the 45% black mugshots would sign the petition. You got that? If you showed white people more black mugshots, they were twice as likely not to support the petition.
Wow.
That's a little frightening, isn't it? Here's the other experiment. Actually, maybe that's not the correct way to say it. I should say white folks were twice as likely to support reforms when they saw less black mugshots. That's probably the more accurate way to say it. Here's the second experiment. This was with white New Yorkers. And they took these white New Yorkers into two groups. And one group was given this presentation that showed 40%, you know, as a data statistics presentation, right? So they gave them a presentation. One group got to see a presentation that claimed 40% of Americans' prisoners are black. The other group saw the same presentation, but the stat was that 60% of prisoners are black. And they got the same kind of result. They were asked whether or not they would sign a petition calling for the end of New York City's infamous stop and frisk policy. They found 33% of the people in the 40% black stat would be willing to sign it, but only 12% of the 60% black people would sign it. Now that's confusing. Let me rephrase this. White New Yorkers were almost three times more likely to support ending stop and frisk when they thought fewer black people are being imprisoned. One of the ways I would read this is to say that white folks are cool with harsh criminal penalties as long as they're going to black people. And I would think that the history of this country and our current sentencing policies would agree with that, considering that originally the sentencing for crack cocaine was 500 grams of powder cocaine equaled the same sentence as 5 grams of crack cocaine. Guess which groups use powder versus crack? It's white versus black, folks. And that has been rectified a little bit during the Obama administration. It's not a 100-to-1 racial disparity anymore. It's just a 18-to-1 racial disparity. The researchers concluded, this was Hetty noting, that, quote, many legal advocates and social activists seem to assume that bombarding the public with images, statistics, and other evidence of racial disparities will motivate people to join the cause and fight inequality. But we've found that, ironically, exposure to extreme racial disparities may make the public less, not more, responsive to attempts to lessen the severity of policies that help maintain those disparities. End quote. You want to get the votes of white America, folks, you got to scare them that their white kids are going to get arrested. If it's black kids getting arrested, they don't give a shit. Sorry to have to report it. Anyway, that's all the time we got here for hour one, but hour two, Toker Talk Radio is up next. We got some interesting stories. Plus, we're opening up with videos of the Kardashian mom and Larry King, Conan O'Brien, and Andy Richter getting high on an edible on stage on the Conan O'Brien show. Plus, three amazing stories that you got to stay tuned for.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
For Big Island Zane, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.
Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and